Hey everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on January 28th, 2015. I'm Ruler of Time, and this is Ruler T. What's up, Chris?
Nick, what are you doing while the great snowpocalypse of the Northeast happens?
Yeah, being glad that it only got down to the 40s here, basically. I understand that you deal with snow on a regular basis, but that there was a lot of snow recently.
Yes, there was a lot. Now, I didn't get a whole lot. Harrisburg was relatively spared by that, but the Northeast in general has gotten in that cold weather came to us. So, Nick, I don't know if you've ever heard of it. There's websites where, like, attractive women will just say, like, really naughty things, and it's, like, a way to get people off, like, audibly. I want you to do that, but through talking about how hot it is. So for just a moment, I'll go close my eyes and envision... that I'm in somewhere where it isn't, like, 30 degrees and ball sack cold and wind blowing in my face.
All right, hang on a sec. Hey, I'm Nick, and I'm here in western Florida, where it gets routinely up to the mid-70s, even in January. The sun was out today, and in the bright sunlight, it felt like it was in the 80s. It rains here, it doesn't snow.
Giggity. I didn't expect you to actually use a sexy voice for it. I was like, he's going to do it like Al Roker, like it's a weather report. I was like, ooh, what is this?
yeah. Okay, then.
Yeah, I'm doing well, to answer your initial question.
I've been thinking about some weird stuff lately.
What is it?
You ever have that feeling where you just, like, remember a random event from your past that just kind of sticks out? It wasn't, like, an important event or anything. It just kind of, like, stuck with you. And you just think to yourself, like, how different you would react to it as you are now as opposed to how you did then because you're a different person. I've had that moment about this thing. I can't stop thinking about it. It's this thing that happened when I was, like, 12. I remember what happened was... my classmates and I were waiting for the bus to go to school. And this woman walks by, like this 60s, 70s-year-old woman walks by. And we just kind of like, you know, stop talking and wait in silence for her to pass by us. And as she's passing us, she says, "It doesn't cost a dime to say hello." And back then, all of us were just like, "Oh, hello, oh, good morning." But now I'm just thinking to myself, she didn't greet us first. She just assumed we would greet her first, and then went all bitchy and snooty that we weren't being polite while she was also not being polite. It's like, what the fuck's up with that? A double standard bitch.
Nick's like, this is where injustice started, and it's where it's gonna end, too. Like, Nick, she might be dead. Good!
It's like, that's reverse ageism.
Nick, it's the elderly. It's just what they do.
Yeah, gotta judge those... useless millennials.
Yeah, like, I think I've probably... I don't know if I've told the story on this podcast before, but I was for a while, I used to go to get sandwiches at Subway all the time, and I'd always get meatball subs. Mm-hmm. And if you've never been to a Subway or gotten a meatball sub before, it's always 8 meatballs to a sub. And right. I was like, I go there so frequently. Like, I just think this to myself. I'm like, why don't they ever just, you know, like, give me a 9th meatball? Because sometimes they'll scoop the 9th meatball, but then they, like, shuffle it off and they only give me 8. So, like, it happened to be election day. I got my sub and it was like 8. And I just decided to post a funny, like, Facebook message about it. And I was just like, the Subway I go to never gives me a 9th meatball. This is fucking injustice. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why I will not be voting today. And then I get a comment. Not from Paul Dugan, but from Paul Dugan's grandmother.
What?
Who was just like, if you don't vote today, then there might not even be a meatball sandwich for you in the future.
This is America. You have to cherish your right to vote, not be upset about meatball subs, you little man.
I was just like, I don't know at what point you thought my injustice-ridden cry of 9 meatballs on a sub was a legitimate complaint.
Social media humor is such a Generation Y thing, Chris.
But I was baffled. But I was like, I don't even know how she found my... I'm not friends with Paul Dugan's mom.
You think that, like, Paul is, like... she just, like, monitors all of Paw's Facebook friends and waits for them to post things that she can criticize them for.
Yeah, it was just like she came in just like a fucking hawk, just like, get in! Let me shit all over you, asshole!
Did you ever tell Paw about this?
Yes, he thought I was hysterical, but I was just like, why did your grandma fucking message me on Facebook?
Did he laugh uproariously about it and then go, ha ha, grandma?
Yeah, that'd be great. He's just like, oh, Grams. That's what she always does.
Oh man,
she seeks out people on Facebook who make disparaging comments.
She's looking for some things to judge. she took forever to learn how the face of my book works, and she's gonna use it. Damn it!
Oh, here we go. Loyalty gets you nowhere in this country. I've been eating at this Subway for over 3 years now, but they still won't hook me up with the knife meatball. That, everyone, is why I won't be voting today. From Paul's grandma. You don't vote in that sub, make it even smaller and cost more. If you don't vote, don't gripe. What the fuck? The fuck, Paul's grandma?
Oh, those commie Subway places are gonna come in and turn prices through the roof for inferior products.
You let the Republicans back in office. You let the Republicans back in office, you won't be getting meatball subs anymore. Oh, man. No. Weird topic.
What were we going to talk about?
We made a manga suggestion for this week.
I am looking at it right now, but that's not nearly as interesting as that. Okay. Alright. The suggestion we took was for Gekkan Shoujo Nozaki-kun, which means, like, monthly Shoujo Nozaki-kun, because it's about a shoujo manga artist named Nozaki. Mm-hmm. And, basically, there's this girl who has a crush on him, named Sakura, and she works up the nerve at the start of the series to confess to him, but he thinks that she's just recognized his work as a mangaka, and so he, like, gives her his autograph. And from then on, they get closer, but only in the sense that she starts working as his assistant, basically. Mm-hmm. And there are lots and lots of weird characters in this mostly comedic series. In fact, almost entirely comedic series. And it's a young coma, which it's the four-panel gag comic type of deal.
Now, when I initially suggested this one, I read what was, like, the plot synopsis, and at first glance, it did kind of sound like it was a romance series of some kind, like a comedy romance. Very quickly, everyone was just like, it is nothing like that, and I was like, oh, I guess I had that wrong.
There are characters with romantic interests, but they are played for laughs.
Yeah, it is almost exclusively straight, wacky comedy four-panel series that just has, you know, the backdrop of being, like, a shoujo romance-esque series behind it, but doesn't really delve into it other than to mostly just poke fun at the tropes of a shoujo romance series in the context of, hey, I'm trying to write this scene, we're gonna go through a short, like, kind of series of comics about it, and at the end of it, I'm gonna be like, that's stupid, and I'm not gonna do it in my series.
Mm-hmm. Basically.
Yeah, and it works. It is ultimately a comedy series, so your ability to judge and enjoy this series is basically going to come down to whether or not it suits your style of humor. But to that regard, I found several times where I found this series rather amusing.
Yeah. I very much dislike, like, critiquing Yonkoma because they are all the same, and the sense of humor is the only thing that separates them, and sense of humor is always relative. You know, it's like, if I really liked something, my recommendation would be, you know, check it out for a little bit and then see whether or not you like it, because the sense of humor is going to be the same all the way through. If I really didn't like it, I would say, you know, maybe give it a shot, and then if you really like it, then keep reading it, because it's probably going to be the same all the way through.
Yeah. It's really hard to, like, come down and be like, don't even read it. Like, I'm like, why don't you just try 3 pages, and if you found that amusing, you're probably going to find the rest of it pretty funny, too.
Now, given the format of our show, I guess that we do have somewhat more insight to offer because, you know, we do a largely comedic sort of podcast, in addition to talking about the manga that we read. So if people agree with our sense of humor, that should give them insight into whether or not they'll like this series.
Yes.
So I guess let's talk about this for a bit. I found some characters to be far more funny than others. I'll admit that. Like, I really don't get Mikoshiba.
He's the one who's kind of like, he seems like he's going to be introduced as like the handsome like love interest rival, but then you turn out he's actually more of like the shoujo protagonist, and then he's constantly wishy-washy and fucking like a whiny person, like constantly almost like the one who needs to be rescued. Like, he's just this weird sort of
he's
unsure
popular
of himself.
He's popular with girls, but he's not a playboy. He just is, like, incapable of turning down any of their requests. And then...
he's really shy, too. Yeah. Like, you know, like, he just... If, like, they constantly make mention of the fact when he's drawing his manga, you know, the scene would come up where, like, the shoujo character protagonist would be like, oh, I hope he likes me. Oh, I can't let him see me like this. Like, that would be fucking embodied in Mikoshiba more than anyone else. Like, he'd be the one being like, I can't let her know, or, you know, whatever bullshit like that. I still found him amusing. I just don't think he had the strongest parts in it.
Yeah, and they do a similar thing with Kashima, who is very closely related to Mikoshiba, and basically fulfills the, like, inverse role. Like, she is the cool playboy that everyone likes, even though she's a girl. And so both of them serve largely as inspirations for Nozaki's characters. You know, Mikoshiba serves as a great inspiration for the female lead, and Kashima for the male characters, because they share those traits that, you know, those archetypical shoujo romance characters do. So, it's funny because they're gender swapped.
I will fight you, though. I found fucking Kashima to be hilarious, and I love the notion of making that annoying fucking princely playboy character a female, and then, like, not changing the joke otherwise. So, like, it's just, I don't know why I found
it
so marveling.
It does help to point out the absurdity of a lot of the, of that character type in shoujo romance stories.
And
just by changing that, yeah.
And I found it so marveling that the relationship that she has a senior classmate who works in, like, the drama club with her, and he's a very straight-laced character. And I find it funny, because they don't change, essentially, what that relationship would be with, like, the eccentric and annoying character matched up with, you know, a straight-laced character who's constantly kind of, you know, having to use physical violence to shut up their stupidity.
So he's just beating her.
Yeah, but if they gender swap it, so it's the dude who's the one who's beating the female character, and be like, stop fucking doing this. I was just like, it's actually kind of cool that we haven't seen this before, and they're not going to shy away from it.
I do like that there was one bit...
It's empowerment through abuse somehow.
There was one bit that I really did laugh hard at, which was they have one of those types of exchanges, and then in the next set of comics, you know, Kashima's face is all bandaged up, and someone asks her about that, oh, wow, he really took it to you for that. And she said, yeah, blackboards make for surprisingly good projectiles.
Yeah, like, it's fucking hysterical, like, the shit that'll happen in these fights. They pull no punches on that.
I did find Kashima to be considerably more amusing than Mikoshiba. I don't know, I found the humor featuring just him to be not nearly as funny as the stuff featuring Kashima exclusively.
Yeah.
When they're playing off each other, it's better, but I don't know. It's weird because it's sort of the same joke, but it's just funnier with one of them for me.
Yeah, and I can understand that. I think my favorite character was honestly just Nozaki, because he's like a very boring character on the surface. You know, he's the quiet, tall, you know, very handsome, but, you know, man of few words for the most part. But he's really only interested in his manga, and it comes out to great effect because, you know, Sakurai is constantly trying to, you know, get closer to him, and he just doesn't get it. He just has, like, these weird ways of missing the point of all these romantic moments. So there's a small chapter or a series of chapters where it's raining out, and they forgot an umbrella, like, the two of them together. So they run back into the school, and they're, like, you know, drying off, and Nozaki just comments, he's like, man, two young people trapped all alone in an empty school kind of reminds you of those manga, doesn't it? And Sakura, she goes to, like, romance series. She's like, yeah. Yes, this is the moment where we share our intimate storytelling together, and we share this solid moment that becomes the foundation of our relationship. And then Ozaki's just like, and they were never seen again. She's like, you're fucking thinking of horror series. God damn it. And, like, following that, he then takes her to his apartment because, she works there, and, you know, they're all wet from wearing that. And he's like, oh, hey, feel free to change your clothes. And she's just like, what? I have no clothes here. What could I possibly change into? He's like, oh, hey, I have this sailor suit you could change into, and maybe you could do a few poses for me so I could model you for my series. Cause it's like this long, ongoing joke that he wants to get Sakura dressed as a sailor solely so he can model her for what a sailor suit would look like in his series.
And it's not perverted in any way, because he starts off by trying to wear the sailor suit in order to get poses for himself.
Yeah, like...
And he just can't do it because his form is, like, too muscular.
So
he's just counseling everyone else to try and do it, basically.
It's great. Like, every time it pops up, that joke still makes me laugh. Of, like, his desperation of trying to get someone to wear this fucking suit. And I think he's just funny just because of how absurd almost all of his comments or missing the point moments are. Like, it's just so weird. He doesn't talk so much of the time, and then when he does, it's usually just like, I've completely missed the entire purpose of this scene because I'm thinking about something completely different. Sorry.
My favorite bits with him are when he's thinking about manga in general and how he's realized, I'm like, this is completely unrealistic. Do these girls never study? So he, like, draws, like, a little page where it's just a little thing featuring the heroine of his series where she's just like, I found this study planner book, and so I study for a little bit every day, and now my grades are good, and it's helping me advance in my love life. And it's just like, this is terrible and boring. You can't do this. I love his editor, by the way. That's my favorite character.
The editor who, like, kind of hates him, but he assumes hates him a lot more than he actually does. It's a weird dynamic, but it is very amusing.
Yeah, like, he's just all business, and so, you know, Nozaki goes off on these weird, wild tangents, and is just, like, trying to ground him. He's like, no, you can't do that. No. Why are you trying to do this? No, you can't do that. And there's this one chapter, because they actually have an interesting sort of relationship, because Nozaki had another editor before, named Maeno, who was, like, the worst ever. He just didn't listen to anything Nozaki wanted to do. He was just off in his own world all the time. One time, he told Nozaki to make some changes, and then Nozaki handed him the exact same manuscript, and he was like, oh, good, you listened to me. This is perfect. And then, so, you can understand why he hates him so much. And then, Ken, who's nothing like him, he's trying to throw out all these wild ideas that Maeno would love that are actually terrible. And Ken's just like, no, these are terrible. And so Nozaki's like, I was just testing you because Maeno was like that. And so I'm glad that you're like this. And Ken's like, okay, well, I'm glad that you have confidence in me. So let's hear your real ideas. Actually, I thought of so many fake ideas that I didn't think of any real ones.
It's just like, I had nothing to actually provide to you today. God damn it.
So yeah, there are definitely some amusing bits in it. There are quite a few that I felt really missed, but there are some that are genuinely really funny.
There are a lot of very funny bits. And one thing I actually really like about the series is I love the artwork in it. I don't know why. I love
the
character design in this series. It's absolutely fantastic. So I absolutely recommend it for that, if nothing else. But it feels weird, because it feels like, I don't know, this might be considered too short of a recap, but once I realized it was a straight comedy four-panel series, it kind of reaches that point where it's like, unless we specifically just continuously mention any moments we like, it's hard to kind of say too much more about this series. I mean, there's a couple characters I guess we haven't talked about, like Seo, like the super skilled girl who's just kind of brash and annoying and mean
to
people.
But she also has a lovely singing voice, so she has an alternate persona as this singer who everyone has a completely different opinion on, which is, you know,
whatever. Yeah. So I liked her, but I mean, other than that, I think there's not too many more characters to think of. So there's the other mangaka who does the raccoons. That was actually a funny bit, too.
The Chuki stuff?
Yeah, where she's like comment, like the way she's trying to work fucking raccoons into shit. And I think it was like Sakura who's maybe like extrapolating upon it into like weird, like, oh, it's like a romance through time series with the raccoons or something like that. There's weird stuff like that, but I mean, other than that, there's really no way to really dig too deep into a series like this, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, there are quite a few jokes that just did not appeal to me, but I think that that's largely because, you know, just goofy Japanese-style humor. Sometimes there's just a cultural difference in humor, and, you know, just sometimes different people have different senses of humor.
Yeah. I still, by the large part, thought it was a funny series, and I would recommend it to anybody who wants to catch something that's funny or something that's a little bit different. I think a lot of people who enjoy this series, this podcast, would enjoy Nozaki-kun.
Yeah. And in terms of, like, if you think of it sort of basically as, like, a comic strip, it's a pretty damn funny comic strip.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's about all I got to say about that, too, so...
Well, pretty good. We're continuing our pattern, Nick. We're now 2 for 2 on good recommendations this year.
Yeah. Keep sending us good stuff, guys. Come on.
Nick, you need to keep this train going this week.
We'll see how it goes.
Nick's like, there was a sequel to Freezing, so I think this one will be it.
This is bad, I'll put it that way.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's head into the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap.
Now, can I interrupt real quick to mention two things?
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Can I or not?
Go ahead.
Okay, cool. There's just two things. I want to mention this right now instead of at the end of the show, just so people who maybe tune at the end get a chance to hear about this. But there's two things I wanted to really quickly mention. One is our title card artist, Steve Mann, doing a Patreon now. If you're interested in supporting him and the Patreon is something you like to do, you can check out his stuff at patreon.com/Steve Mann. So there's an option there. Go check his stuff out. I really hope he gets some good support from it because he deserves it. But also, I wanted to mention iTunes and our reviews. I try to mention it at the end of it, but I just wanted to bring it up because I went through like the hobby section top podcasts and we're losing to like 85 different woodworking podcasts. So I need your support, guys. We need you to, if you have iTunes, if you go on, just give us a rate and subscribe. Big thanks to ZY63er Omega, who gave us a recommendation this past week. It really does help us out. It kind of helps put more eyeballs in the show and allows us to do more. I just wanted to mention it real quick. I'm not trying to make this a big long plug. Let's get to Bleach.
Yeah. Help us beat those woodworking assholes.
There's a lot of them. There's a beekeeping podcast we're losing to. I don't know what a beekeeping podcast is.
Okay. So, Bleach, chapter 612, Dirty. Just dirty.
Well, Nick, having finished the chapter, obviously you'd call it dirty. Like, that's what I... It makes so much sense. I mean, when I read it, I was like, what could dirty mean in application to this chapter? And having finished it, I'm like, of course, that's what it means.
Yes. Yeah, that's... Why don't you just, like... Why don't you just take me through that path that allowed you to reach that conclusion once we get through this chapter?
Okay, I will. Okay. I will at the end.
So... As was happening last time, Jubak killed everybody in the Soul King's palace and reached the Soul King and was like, "You're an imperfect god who is unable to escape even in a moment like this. I shall bring an end to your endless humiliation. Oh no, perhaps you already foresaw this very day. Well, goodbye, Ryo, my father." And he stabs this, like, amber crystal thing that contains the Ryo, who has no arms and has weird eyes. And, yeah. Apparently he could see the future, or something. Well, he's got a sword through his chest now, and he's definitely dead. Like Unohana.
I feel like this chapter was perfect for you, because it gave you, like, 17 different opportunities to use that.
So many dead people being mentioned. So, then we cut away, shock of shocks, to Rukia and Renji down the ground in Soul Society, and they meet up with Hirako, who's like, "Oh, you guys are here." And they're like, "What's going on?" And they mention that Hirako looks like he's banged up, which I guess he's got bandages, but it's hard to see because he doesn't show up in any close-ups in this entire chapter in a way that shows his torso off, so...
I don't even remember what happened to him.
Neither do I.
I don't... Did he do anything in this past year?
I don't know. So All Might is also there, and he's like, "Of course he's fine." They're like, "Oh, you're here too, All Might." He's like, "Yeah, of course I am. And thanks to us and Captain Hirako using his Zambakuto's ability on the enemy at the very last moment, the enemy's attack veered, and we were saved." I don't even remember you guys being tense. And so Omaya is trying to act all big because, you know, that's what he usually does. And Renji's like, why did you bring your sister here? And he's like, I had to take her with me or else she would have died. Asshole.
Yeah, fuckhead. Why you gotta be such an ass about it?
He doesn't say that because Omaya is not, you know, meant to act cool. So, yeah. And Soy Fawn punches him in the back for being loud and stuff. And so Soy Fawn says, the wounds that girl and I received from the enemy have just finally healed, thanks to Assistant Captain Hinamori's hard work. And Hinamori's like, I'm here, guys. I exist.
Remember me? Sure you do.
She's like, hello. Doesn't say anything else.
I'm everyone's favorite.
Miss Kuchiki. And that's it.
I'm everyone's favorite prevention from inserting myself, you know, fucking self-insert fanfic character to romance Hitsugaya with character.
Yes. And he's a zombie now, so.
Well, yeah, he's definitely dead, Nick. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Definitely dead. So, Soy Fun is actually noticeably bandaged up. Like, all of her body that would normally be exposed is instead wrapped in bandages. Like, she must be, like, mummified, but with her clothes on over the bandages or something. It's ridiculous. So, they make an observation that Soy Fun is acting mellow or something. Whatever. It's a pointless panel. They're like, okay, is everybody here? And Hiraka's like, I don't know. But there was the message. All captains and assistant captains convene, even if you must disengage from whomever you're fighting. I'm sure everybody came as fast as they could. And Soy Fawn puts her hand up against the wall, the door opens up, and Urahara is there, and Nanao, and Byakuya, and is there a person behind that pedestal, or is that a thing on the pedestal?
That's
Urahara's brother.
Yeah. So it's two captains, or two people of, like, any kind of captain or lieutenant captain station, Urahara, and then other kid.
Right. And so they're like, oh, look at that kid. He's like, I'm Yushiro Shio, and it's an honor to meet you. And Soy Fawn is like, it's Yorichi's little brother! You have grown up so much! He's like, oh my god, she's showing an emotion! It continues the whole Soy Fawn's got it for Yorichi joke, but it's kind of... She actually gets an amusing bit in here.
Is that what you got out of it? I just got the idea, like, she... I know she, like, that's the notion, is that Soy Fawn has feelings for her. But I guess from this, I was just like, I mean, regardless of whether or not she had the feelings for her, she just has a close affiliation with that family.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why she's like, oh, I'm so glad to see you've grown up, like a fucking, you know, like
doting on him. Like, I like how she offers him an allowance.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny. So Hiraka says, where is everybody else? And Urahara says, Squad 7 asked that they be allowed to act independently due to Captain Komura's injuries. They refused our offer to send a medic team, and it's just Iba and Wolf Komamura, like, wandering through rubble in a little panel. And Captain Kuchiki informed us that the captains of Squads 3 and 9 will be linking up with Squad 12, but knowing Captain Kuratsuchi, they'll join us eventually. He'll suffer like the rest of us if the Soul Society disappears. Squad Captains 3 and 9 are the zombies under Mayuri's control.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I had to stop for a moment, and I was like, I really wish you just said the captains' names instead of what squads they belong to, because I couldn't fucking remember half of them. That's what, Rose and Kensai, I guess?
Yes.
Those are the two. So Rose and Kensai aren't dead, presumably. They're basically saying they're going to be...
Control.
Yeah, they're basically saying we're going to revive them in some fashion, because it's fucking Kuratsuchi, so he's just going to fucking... It's Muir. He's going to revive them somehow. He's going to do bullshit and make them whole again.
Although, what the fuck happened to Hisagi? Because I know he was knocked out of commission, but they say he's just like, and for some reason, the captain and squad... Oh, wait, he does mention them. Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
And he, you know, recaps like, oh, looks like Squad 11's captain, Squad 9's assistant captain, Madarama and Masagawa and all these people, they're getting emergency care. And three of them will be alright, but Captain Zaraki is severely wounded, so it's a good thing he went on that tremendous training arc to have one fight and then be
against the stupidest opponent.
Oh, God. And they're like, oh, and we haven't been able to reach either the captain or assistant captain of Squad 10 because they're zombies. But we don't know that, I guess.
Yeah. But, Nick, he's definitely dead. I mean, that's like the one person they confirmed in this chapter.
The most popular character in Bleach is dead.
Yeah, that's the one character in all the characters that look like they were in dire straits. They mention all of them are fine, at least, in some way in this chapter. But Hitsugaya is the one person they're like, well, we don't know about him. So he's definitely the one who's going to die.
So Hiraka says, all right, well, now that you've gathered those of us who are here, Pierre, what do you want to do? And he's like, storm Ryukyu. And like, what are you talking about? How can we do that? He's like, we can do it with the Tenshi Heisho that Yushiro has brought and this pedestal that Captain Kuratsuchi built and with the immense spiritual energy of the assembled captain classes. Most of which aren't here, but shut up. So they had the means of launching Ichigo and company up into Ryukyu. Why didn't they just wait until the captains arrived? Because we don't... It doesn't seem like a lot of time has passed since Ichigo and company took off, so...
I have no clue.
We have to split the party, Chris.
We have to make sure that these characters that, for the most part, haven't needed to do a whole lot, we still present the chance, like, they're gonna do some stuff. Don't count Kensai and Rose out yet! Let's count them out.
So, Ichibe, we cut back up onto Ryukyu, where everybody is racing to stop Juhabak, and Ichibe is just sitting there, having been left behind, and he says, I'm sorry, humans. You guys can't defeat Juhabak. I was bullshitting you.
I mean... You didn't have to tell us this. I really wasn't like, man, I can't wait for Chad to beat the X-axis. Like, it'd be so weird for that to happen. I'm trying to think of, like, an adequate scenario, like, where that would make sense. It'd be like fucking... I can't think of anything except a wrestling reference that really nobody's going to
get. Curtis Axel's totally going to beat Roman Reigns and become the new number one contender.
Something like that. I was trying to think of like something non-wrestling related. Just so infamous plan doesn't swear up a storm. Just we don't hear one long fucking expletive over from Britain. Like, it'd be like a Goomba fucking takes out Mario. Like, if it was, like, an actual, like, narrative series, like, one Goomba just nailed fucking Mario in the leg. And, like, I love Goombas.
That first Goomba you're supposed to jump over instead just tramples right over it.
Yeah, I love Goombas. I'm not gonna bother taking down fucking Mario at his peak. I can't. But now, that was a chapter of Bleach, wasn't it, Nick?
Yeah, it was, yeah. Yes, it was.
Do you know why it's called Dirty now?
Why don't you just tell me?
Because I firmly believe that Kubo opens up Spotify, goes to the U.S. top 10 lists, listens to a couple songs to find a narrative word that's interesting to him, and uses it as the chapter title. So I'm greatly looking forward to next week's chapter, Uptown Funk, and the chapter after that, Love Me Harder, Harder. Because sometimes he mixes it up a little bit. He puts some wacky grammar in there. Yeah,
maybe
that's
it's just his interpretation of what they mean or something.
Yeah, like he listened to fucking Dirty by Christina Aguilera from like 7 years ago, and he was just like, man, that's topical, but too many R's. I'm going to make it just the regular word. And he was just like, that's perfect. It captures so much of what I was trying to tell in this chapter. And people were like, what were you trying to say? And he's like, I don't
know. Kubo does listen to some weird ass music.
He does. That's not a problem, though. Cultural, man.
So I'm sure that it probably wasn't something like Christina Aguilera, is my point.
Yeah, well, he did, I know in the Tonkabons he used to actually have, like, character theme songs. And I think, like, Chad's was, like, Helicopter Block Party or something like that.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And, like, Zaraki's was some, like, obscure metal band.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be completely shocked by it. We'll move on to Fairy Tale.
Yeah, all right. Let's do it.
I think it's wrong. Fairy Tale, chapter 417.
You're gonna have to read so much stuff out loud, Chris.
This is a crazy long chapter. It's ridiculous. 417, Lone Journey 2. And our cover page is Gildarts, who they notice the first time we've seen him in 2 years. And he's staying on a street corner, and he's like, I ain't...
posing for his album cover.
It ain't that I like being alone. Lone life just suits my temperament better, that's all. And this chapter is completely 100% without dialogue in any way, shape, or form. It is initially a story showing what Gildarts is doing, which from what we can gather, is punching monsters to death to eat them. And then Natsu shows up, and the two of them party, and beat each other up, and party, and eat food together, and beat each other up, and then take baths, and they get angry at each other, they beat each other up while they're naked. And they do that, essentially in a pattern, until Natsu asks Gildarts to presumably train him, and Gildarts, you know.
I think he's just asking for a spar.
Yeah, it could just be that, too. He looks like he's asking him for some kind of battle. They're having an even sort of matchup until Natsu suddenly gets eaten by, like, a brontosaurus thing of some kind, and then Gildarts gets angry and destroys it and a mountain, and then Natsu's like, you win. It's yours. But then they agree to go their separate ways until they realize they each took each other's bags, so then they meet each other back up, and they beat each other up, and then we see a picture of Gildarts and Kana.
They know this because, like, I was like, this bag feels different. He empties it out. It's just, like, a bunch of happy fish and some, like, half-eaten apples and, like, a dumbbell or something like that. And they cut over to where Natsu has emptied Gildarts' bag out, and it's a bunch of racy magazines.
It's a bunch of porno magazines, essentially. Like, okay.
It's the day before hard drives, man.
This is, I finally understand where forest porn comes from now. Gildart's fucking bag. He drops it off and leaves it there.
Yep.
Honestly, though, I like this chapter. I like it a lot. Yeah. I thought it was a cute chapter to do it all without dialogue. It still told the complete story of what it was going for. It's not like it was hard to read or anything like that. It was fun.
I also like the realization that Gildarts has that Natsu has gotten stronger. Like, considerably stronger. Mm-hmm. So...
very cute chapter. I mean, it's weird to be like, we're done with Fairy Tail already, because it's been like 2 minutes, but it's tough to say a whole lot against a chapter that has no dialogue, is a training chapter.
There's no dialogue to make fun of.
It's just a training chapter, essentially, and it's, you know, like a small character. But I think it's cool to see Gildarts again. But yeah. No, I mean, other than that, I really can't think of much else to say about this. I like the chapter, just not a whole lot to say.
So, okay.
There you go.
Let's move on then to Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma.
Oh, actually, real quick, I guess we haven't mentioned it yet. If you haven't heard the big announcement, Shonen Jump announced this week that we're going to be getting a new series entering into the lineup because High Fly Cluster.
Is it, Chris? Tell me.
It is My Hero Academia, which we reviewed at the end of last year. We both talked about how we liked it and mentioned we were like, wow, it'd be awesome if that got into English Jump. But, you know, if it doesn't, so be it. That's fine. We still have plenty of good series. But High Fly Cluster's ending, and we're getting My Hero Academia next week. We'll be getting the first chapter of the series to kind of introduce people to it, and then following that, it'll go immediately into, you know, current week, you know, week by week translation status at that point. So if you're completely alien to the series, there will be a pretty big break. Actually, not that big. The series is only like 28 chapters, so it's not that long, but there will be the break between them that you'll either have to, you know, wait till the volumes come out and read it that way. But, yeah, no, My Hero Academia is coming out. And also, I guess we forgot to mention it, for the past week or two, and I think for another 2 weeks, Shonen Jump is free. If you don't have a subscription, you can still read the weekly magazine. It's free for, I think maybe it's another week, but that is free out there. And those of you who do have a subscription are currently going to get a reduced rate if you try to re-up at this point. So if you're looking to renew, now is a good time to do it. You'll get it for even cheaper. There we go. Sorry, let's do Food Wars.
Right. So, last time Soma had introduced the entirety of his dish, and everyone was very impressed by it. And so this one opens up with basically everybody awaiting the judge's decision for the winner of the contest between Soma, Kurokiba, and Akira. Who, by the way, in the info page in this edition of Jump, it's their three faces from the poster that featured all of them prior to their match taking place.
I think they have that, like, saved on file, and they're just like, for any time these three characters are the main characters, we'll just use that image.
So, you know, everyone is like, oh my god, he like overcame the difference in his ability to pick out their ingredients, and so someone takes off his headband and he says, for better or for worse, for smiles or for tears, this is it. And all three of the contestants just await the decision. So the headmaster says, a decision has been reached. Well done, all of you. This was a battle of ideas and ideals worthy of these finals. all three chefs presented unique and strongly individual dishes. And he basically goes through each of them and says, you know, the categories in which they excel. And, you know, like, everyone was equally skilled in cooking technique. Both Hayama and Kurokiba excelled in their eye for ingredients. Both chefs chose the most perfect pipe for their dishes. Though not on their level, Yukihira cleverly made up for his lack of skill with deft creativity. And of the three, he is far and away the most inventive. However, the greatest surprise lay in the taste of the dishes. Each of the three was almost exactly as delicious as the others. And everyone was like, then how are they going to decide who won? And
we're going to spin a top.
Yeah. Dreidel, 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 I made you out of clay.
Dreidel, 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 pick my winner for me because I'm lazy. Like, that doesn't even rhyme. He's like, yeah, I'm too lazy to pick a winner. You thought I was going to make up a rhyme?
So he says, the deciding factor in this match was whether or not the dish brought to mind the face of its chef. And someone's like, what? And so Leonor explains, when we eat a truly original plate, just one taste makes us see the chef's face in our heads. And Dojima says, to put it another way, it is a truly and utterly unique dish, one that only that chef could ever make. And as a show of respect to the chef, we call those dishes specialties. So, the headmaster is like, yes, and you know, the one who stands above everyone else and who has pursued his own cooking to the greatest degree, he is the one who has truly looked deeply within his heart and asked, what is cooking to me? And tonight, that chef's name is...
You're going to be doing a long drum roll because you have to go through a flashback first.
I have a flashback we have to go through. So
I wonder if Hayama wins.
Yeah, really. As soon as he starts going into his flashback, he's like, oh, Simba lost. So he remembers basically being a kid on the streets, and so he's like, I never knew my parents or even what my real name was. He's a surfer boy guy now for some reason. But he remembers being taken in by June, and June thinking of him like a toddler, which is kind of weird. Like, she got in one of those, like, little toy cars the toddlers ride around on. He's, like, picking up in one hand. He's like, what the
fuck? Yeah, she has, like, books on first-time parenting.
Which is kind of adorable, but it's just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? He's like 12 already.
You can clearly tell he's like the same age as you.
No, he's not.
Well, I don't, not the exact
June
same.
June is like in her 30s. It's just a joke that she looks like a, yeah, she, it's just a joke that she looks like a little kid when she's like his parental figure, basically. So like, it's basically explaining that like from this point in his life, she's basically, you know, been around him and sort of been his parental figure. Even though they don't really act that way around each other, he's very familiar with her despite that relationship. And so I guess to the point where he's, like, towering over her even though she's, like, twice his age. But even so, it's just like, you should know more about raising kids than this. He's, like, your height. You can't possibly want that little car. So they, you know, basically, like, he basically narrates that, you know, that there was this professor who became my legal guardian and gave me the name I have now, and he recognized this ability that I have, and he called me Akira, which means light, on the hope that I would light the way to new culinary horizons. And it was the woman named Jun Shiomi who pulled me out of the slums and brought me here. And so he basically remembers having success as a kid and like attending, like, I guess some sort of like press conference. Oh, an entrance ceremony. That's what it was. Sorry. And her being so proud and patting him on the head, and he's like, yeah, stop doing that. Them working together in the academy and him exceeding all expectations and getting really good grades and so on and so forth. And even though she congratulated him, he was just like, oh, who cares? You know, I forget this part. Fuck. Basically, he was incredibly dedicated to his work, and June related to his father figure that she could never thank him enough for all that he's done, and that's what makes her so scared. He's always the one doing everything for me, and I'm afraid that in the end I'm just forcing this all on him for my own selfish gain. And Hayama overheard this conversation, and so he went out into a field and lay in the grass and was like, no, Jun, you aren't doing that. And I had to go all the way out to this field in order to say that to myself. Manga.
Yeah.
So he remembers back to being raised in the street and, you know, being beaten by some guy who's like, oh, you're stop riding through our garbage and stuff. But then June, you know, reached out to him and found him and took him away from that torture. And so he thinks to himself, She's the one who gave me a reason to live. My name may be Light, but the one who brought Light into my life was her. And so he put tremendous pressure on himself in order to succeed, in order to basically fulfill the favor that she did to him by taking away from that. And so he thinks to himself, back in the present, I have put everything into this one dish. And so he is announced as the winner, and he raises his fist. And the headmaster says, that was a dish worthy of being called a specialty, your seared pike carpaccio. And so Soma thinks to himself, to me, it's always been about my dad, to be like him, to be better than him. My cooking that's mine and no one else's. Which, I don't know, it's kind of weird. Does that mean that Hayama won because he cooked for someone other than himself, but Soma didn't win because he cooked for someone other?
Well,
that's confusing to me.
What I gather from it is Hayama won because he used that inspiration in his life as a dedication to perfect his own art, whereas Soma has not yet put his dad's cooking out of his mind and isn't yet focused on creating his own identity as a kitchen chef. He's just concentrated solely on catching up with his dad.
So, I guess their goals are different despite the similar influence. Mm-hmm. Like, Hayama doesn't want to overcome June. He wants to be as good as possible for her sake. And someone specifically just wants to overcome his father. He's got, like, an actual ceiling on his goals.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the end of the chapter. Hayama won, so Soma, not in the council, the Elite Council of Ten yet. But probably too early for him to be doing that kind of shit anyway.
I like this a lot. I like that they kind of came in with a bit of a surprise ending. And, you know, we had mentioned the previous weeks that of the trio, Hayama was kind of being created as the antagonist, whereas the other guy was kind of being he was being kind of put as like an anti-hero, or kind of like the third canon to it, but Hayama was the antagonist. But this chapter kind of shows a different aspect of that to make it so when he gets his victory, the reader can still celebrate it along with him. You don't have to look at this as a sad moment because Soma won. You get to be able to be like, good, Hayama, you know, was clearly worked for this and earned something. Right. Though apparently that didn't help completely, because apparently there was a lot of outrage on different forums.
Really?
Where people were just like, how could Soma not lose? I haven't seen these myself. Member of our chat, Tropical, Tropical Blitz, mentioned that apparently that's been an issue, though, that some people are not happy.
It's great that people care that much, though.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's also kind of cool that I guess there's a shonen series out there right now where the main character doesn't always have to win.
Yeah, and it's okay, guys. Daniel Bryan doesn't always have to win. I mean, Soma doesn't always have to win.
Yeah, Soma doesn't always have to win the Royal Rumble. I mean, the cooking contests.
I have actually seen some people like say some very passionate things about certain characters that they do and don't like. Like, there are some people who are just like, Megumi doesn't even deserve to be in the Academy anymore. She fucked up too many times. Where some are like, oh, Megumi's so awesome, though.
To be fair, I had similar thoughts about Newsroom for a while. I was like, why does Mackenzie even have a job? She's constantly fucking up. But that's really just comes down to how poorly Adam Sorkin wrote females in that series.
And, you know, even though Soma failed, he clearly exceeded a bunch of people's expectations. They really pushed that point home in the last chapters, seeing how he was seen by everyone as not just being the underdog, but not having a chance to stand on the same grounds as Hayama and Kurokiba. So for them to get to the end and say, like, it was really close between all three of you, and, you know, he misses getting in, like, the Elite 10 by that much. But also, on this very important issue that he as a character has to grow beyond, it is good all around, basically. It makes him, you know, lose and have to improve, but not look like a chump, basically.
Yeah.
So, very, good very effective all around. Glad we got to see this, like, little part of the story arc in its entirety in the online jump.
Yeah, this was actually a pretty good place for the jump pickup to happen, because we managed to kind of see the high point of what this arc was.
Mm-hmm. So, again, looking forward to what we see next. You know, get some of the other characters more involved and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're probably going to do a little bit of a break arc, because that tends to be the way that Shokugeki no Soma goes.
So. And that's understandable.
look for them to take some sort of vacation, basically. Alright, let's move on to Gakyu Hote. Chapter 7.
Beware the magical powder.
With a full color front page, which is a very good sign for Gakyu Hote. Means that it am popular, basically. Yes. Actually, lots of the newer series in Jump are not doing very well. But Gakyu Hote is, apparently.
Yeah, well, and I mean, to be fair, there aren't... A lot of series have happened recently that have had great success. You know, Food Wars, My Hero Academia, Gakyu Hote. So the opportunities and places for a new series to become that successful are a lot more limited. So it's understandable that we're going to kind of see a period of time where a lot of new series are going to come into Jump and then leave pretty quickly just because it's really hard to kind of earn a spot at this point.
So this case is about
cocaine.
Ecstasy. Something.
Cocaine. It's fucking powder that's shaped like in fucking brick-like
it's like
packages.
It makes you feel good when you inhale it / consume it. It's sugar cane. It's like candy powder, but it's given to you by a mysterious dude wearing a fucking luchador mask. And people go crazy from it because they get addicted to it and they have withdrawal symptoms and stuff. And they keep on making references, like the kids do. It's like, isn't this like... Maybe we should be calling this a white powder.
Like they're constantly...
Doesn't this remind you of something?
Yeah, they're constantly just like, yes, and you can sometimes even inject it through yourself, through needle. And they're just like, are we sure about this?
Are we sure this is candy?
It's very much an aware series that it's like, I want to do a series that fucking deals with drugs, but these are high school or fucking elementary school kids. So it's just a powder, a candy powder, that everyone treats exactly the same way as you would cocaine.
I do love that they're just like, doesn't this remind you of something else? I mean, come on. Isn't this basically drugs?
This is a fucking dude roasting fucking candy powder over a spoon on the top of a lighter. Like, maybe, yeah. I mean, this might be.
It's like that one joke from a Family Guy about Cookie Monster being an addict and stuff. So, like, eats a cookie on a spoon because druggy.
Yeah.
So, but they're like, oh yeah, people are so addicted to this, and you can like put it on other stuff, and everybody likes it. At one point, like, Tenta's got a whole bunch of it, and like a dog's eating it out of his hand, and very nearly eating his hand along with it. And so Ibaka responds to this by making faces at the dog, because I guess he realizes he can't just, you know, logic it to death.
Damn you, dog.
So... then Reiko Shiratori, the Madonna of Tenbin Elementary, arrives, and she's got a whole bunch of dogs with her, and Tenta's like, oh, I'm a Shiratori and stuff, and Ibaka's like, aren't you a fan of Iren? And he's like, no, Iren is an idol, Miss Shiratori is a Madonna, they're different categories, I can fat to them both.
Yeah, one day I feel this way, the other day I fap a different way.
Come on, it's nice to have variety in your fat material, Ibaku.
Yeah.
Look, Rampa's the only fat material I need.
Yeah, he's like, I fucking fap to mind arguing people out of situations that they're very unhappy with.
They actually do mention that she showed up in an earlier case as one of the witnesses. So it was like, ah, continuity, constant cast, good job. She says, like, oh, I heard that this magical powder is toxically addictive, and you get too hooked, you'll start getting withdrawal symptoms if you don't eat it every day, and then you can't break free of it. And Baku's like, it sounds way too much like drugs. Seriously. Then one of the dogs pisses on Tento's leg, for some reason. Yeah. So, then, Baku's like thinking to himself, like, oh, these people, what's going on? And Tenta's like, he's got this scary expression on, but maybe he already had a premonition that a new classroom arbitration would be convened concerning the super popular snack. Oh, I never would have guessed.
It'd be great that it's introduced it to us for like 6 pages to be like, and now a case about stealing someone's scissors. Doot, 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 doot.
So, we get this drug sequence, basically. The guy's like, going through withdrawal sequence. He's like, I need the powder, and he reaches out to the shadowy, you know, drug supplier. He's like, give me the white powder, and then he collapses. And He wakes up in a hospital with Ibaku and Tenta looking over him, and he's introduced as Tanaka, Slave to the Powder. Which sounds like a fucking awesome album title. Tanaka, Slave to the Powder.
Cocaine, cocaine.
No, it's not. It's candy. Totally not drugs. So the man's just like, oh man, you're looking really bad. He's got like shriveled up lips. He's gaunt. He's lost weight and stuff. And so it's like, yes, you're going to be the subject of an arbitration session because it's against school rules to bring snacks to school. Yeah, that's the problem here. He brought the snacks to school. So he tells them their story and is like, oh, look, you know, I don't like eating vegetables, so, you know, I would eat it with powder. But then, you know, I got really hooked on it after being supplied with a masked dude. And, you know, he was, like, waiting for me at one point, you know, and he had the wrestling mask, but he also had, like, a surgeon's mask on over that. And so Tenda's like, that's weird. I thought he only wore the wrestling mask. I mean, according to rumors. Like, well, how did you get the bag of it, Tento? Come on. Well, it's different, I know. There's the snack and then there's the powder, but shut up. So Tanaka says, well, you know, maybe it was his sense of danger went up as his reputation did. But anyway, he's really considerate. He created lozenges to make it easier to eat, and he even taught me the method of cooking it, inhaling the vapors, and that makes you feel real nice.
They're like, this is getting really close to fucking heroin, guys.
Barabaka says, you know, when you were asleep, you were muttering to yourself, that's not what you promised, and give me dust over and over. So did something happen? And he's like, yes, I was promised another deal today at 5, so I went to the storehouse. But, flashback, the masked dude was acting weird today. And so I asked him for the dust. He said, I'm calling off today's deal. That thieving dog, it's all been stolen. I've been cleaned out. Apparently, someone stole the magical powder he'd been keeping in the storehouse, so he couldn't sell any to me. And then I collapsed completely exhausted. So, they have a little info thing about withdrawal symptoms, which are withdrawal symptoms, so thanks for that. But it's nice to teach kids about proper drug use.
Yeah, keep them educated.
Yeah. So these things, Tanaka says, you know, I keep thinking I have to quit, but whenever I get close to the phys ed storehouse on the deal day, my body starts acting funny, and my head starts hurting, and I get the urge to scratch myself raw. And when it's real bad, I even have auditory hallucinations of beasts growling. But after buying powder from him and licking it up, they just all go away without a trace. And the little picture of him licking up the powder is, like, terrifying. That tongue is large and creepy. So Buck says, that's stupid. And I mean, how do you know about, you know, placebo effects? Because, you know, if you give a sick person something and call it medicine, even if it's just, like, sugar, then there are times then he or she will get better, as if it had been real medicine. That's how strong the power of human belief can be. Like they say, sickness and health starts with the mind. So he's like, what are you giving me? It's a convenience store Odin stew I had Tento run out and buy earlier. So, yeah, eat it. And he starts to eat it, and it just, like, drops it. And he's like, what happened? You guys, you ate Magic Happy earlier, didn't you? I bet there was a transfer of some dust you'd gotten on your hands. What have you done? My withdrawal symptoms are back.
Be like, dude, you cray-cray.
It's like, that shouldn't happen if you take the drug, though. He's like, it's not just my mind playing tricks. There really are withdrawal symptoms, and I'll never escape the curse of Magical Happy. And so, Abaka's like, you can't get withdrawal symptoms from snack powder. My tsundere rumpo is useless. No more being nice. I will rumpo the hell out of the mystery of the magical happy powder.
I like that he's like, I'm going to argue the shit out of these drugs.
It won't work on a dog. Drugs? I can totally argue with drugs.
I'm going to make those drugs look really stupid.
So a couple days later, Pine is, like, investigating the warehouse, and she is in her Sailor Pine outfit, and Lolimatsu is dressed as Tuxedo Mask. Yes. So they head into the warehouse, and it's like, yes, I will expose the magical powder transaction site thanks to the email sent to the accused yesterday. I will reveal your face at last, Masked Dude. That's the guy's name, Masked Dude. Not Masked Man, Masked Dude. So we cut away briefly as they open up the door to Tento, who has Magical Happy, and he's munching on it. He's like, it sure is addictive. Stop it!
Stop eating it, you stupid kid!
You've met someone who was who became an addict. What's wrong with you? So he's thinking to himself, could there really be a snack product that causes withdrawal symptoms? The courtroom was soon to usher in an unexpected individual in an unexpected way.
I like how they're saying this as though those foods don't already exist.
Yeah,
like,
really.
Get to anybody who's drinking, like, who drinks soda on a constant basis, take them off of it for fucking, you know, like, 3 weeks, and just, like, ask them how the headaches are. Like, it's pretty aware that hell, they're fucking withdrawal symptoms from like, snack products.
I mean, a lot of snacks are designed specifically just to get you to eat a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
So, we cut back into the warehouse where Pine has cornered the... apparently, the masked dude, who is Shira Tori, not wearing a mask or anything, so, yeah. But, for some reason, she's in there, and that's the end of the chapter. It's like, Miss Shira Tori is the masked dude? Well, no, probably not. No, whatever.
It's her dog. I'm just gonna...
That's why she was wearing the surgical mask.
I'm just gonna... I'm going to get consistently worse at guessing them, like, the results to cases now, to the point where, like, it's going to get to the point of being like, who stole the scissors? And I'm like, Usopp!
Who was it you guessed last time?
Last time, I was very wrong. I was like, it's definitely going to be that it happened sometime during the test, and those two girls are red herrings. Like, I was, like, wrong on fucking everything. But in my defense, I couldn't have grasped the fucking... name changey thing, because we didn't, you know, it doesn't work in kanji. Yeah. So, but I was still horrifically wrong in my guesses.
Okay, so let's move on to
So, it is now time for the final chapter of Hi-Fi Cluster.
Oh no.
Hi-Fi Cluster, chapter 18, My Place in Life. They lived happily ever after. The end. Alright, so One Piece.
I don't even know if they lived happily ever after. I didn't read it.
They do. They all live happily ever after.
Tell me anything.
Nick, imagine the happiest scenario that could have come out of those characters, and you're probably on track. They all still hang out in the police station. No, not happy for you. I mean happy in general of the context of the series. You're happy to be like a time machine so you can go back 18 weeks ago and not have the series and jump? Now, I mean, there's really nothing to say. It is basically a chapter where we see that all of what we came to saw, these characters are in a better place now. They're all still working in the you know, police department. They're all still using their labels. Everyone's doing well. And then there's really not much more to say. I think we've pretty much set our piece on Hi-Fi Cluster. I know there are people out there who definitely did enjoy Hi-Fi Cluster, and, you know, I don't like to poop on them too much for that. You know, I don't want to, like, shit on the series like it's, you know, bad for you to enjoy it. I think it's perfectly fine if you liked Hi-Fi Cluster. It's just, it did nothing for me.
It wasn't E-Robot.
Yes, that is true. That's a huge positive. It just did nothing for me throughout it, so I really don't have much of a thought on it ending, other than, like, hopefully... you come back with a more interesting series. I don't know what to say that it doesn't, like, come off as, like, backhanded, shitty, and mean. So, I just wanted to say it's over, and good luck to the author on his next series.
Yep. Okay, One Piece, chapter 774. Leo, Captain of the Tuntata Warriors. So, we actually briefly open with Diamante, you know, staring down Rebecca and Kairos, as well as the recently arrived Robin, who is like, ah, aren't you giving yourself too big of a handicap by taking us all on? And Diamante says, what do you think this is, a fair and square duel in the ring? This is an execution, Nico Robin! So Robin says, don't worry about us behind you anymore, soldier, because I will protect Rebecca so you don't have to cover for her. That's how much of a useless waste she is. She has to have two people protect her. God. Poor Rebecca. So, we cut to where Bartolomeo just laid out Gladius, and so some mooks come in and are like, just picking him up, putting him on a stretcher to carry him off, and so he's like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, we're just transporting the loser's corpse. Please don't hurt us.
so Bartolino says, he's not dead. But it could take 2 or 3 days for him to come to his senses, so let us take care of him. He's like, get out of here. Get out of my sight. So then we cut to within the Smile Factory, where the Tauntaun are gathered around a Denden Mushi, and they're communicating with Viola, and they say, yeah, we can't find Princess Manchuri, and we don't know where Leo is, and I'm so worried that the kind and genteel princess is being terribly mistweeted.
I'm going to be really happy when I don't have to read that shit anymore. Like, fuck you, kids. I didn't like it when Rugrats did, and I'm not liking it when you do it.
So
I'm old and bitter now.
Mowage. So Viola gets on another Denden Mushi and gets to get in contact with Leo. Why don't they just call each other? So, Leo says, all right, we're climbing the outer wall, and Viola says, all right, I get that, but you need to hurry faster, because Giola has caught Manchuri and is forcing her to use her powers! Dun, 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 I guess. Huh?
I completely...
This will be explained in a minute.
I, like, reading this chapter, I was like, I completely forgot that the Tantata princess was, like, a side plot in this arc. I completely forgot about it. Which is weird, because it wasn't even that long ago it was introduced. But yeah, once it came up again...
Because only the Tauntaun had been involved with it, basically.
Yeah, and it's not like it was something that... Like, there were so many other stakes going on with, like, Cryos and Doflamingo that I was just like, oh, I forgot there's, like, a third aspect to this that I just completely, like, zoned out of my head. And One Piece was kind enough to solve it in one more chapter for me, to be like, then we're done.
It's done.
Yeah.
So, Leo rushes off to save the princess along with the beetle Tantata Knight guy. Anyway, so then we cut to the punishment room where Giola is, and she has gathered up the bodies of the injured officers of Doflamingo's, and so she says, "All right, use your power to bring them back." And so we get another introduction. I'm pretty sure she's been introduced before, but it's like, it's Manchuri, the princess of the Tantata, Chief Tanta's daughter. Yeah. And she's like, I want to go home. And Jilla says, silence! Who are you calling Boa Hancock? Because she thinks that everyone thinks she's attractive. That is her joke. But
that
she says it so confidently.
That and finding ways to throw art into random words.
What art are you talking about?
Art standing triumph.
So, and she's like, stop being so spoiled and use your powers. Produce the magical watering can thing to heal people. And she's like, no, I know that you people are going to do bad things to King Riku. And King Doflamingo was lying to us. I know the truth. And so Gio says, who cares? Who cares what you think? So Manchuri says, I don't want to heal any bad people anymore. She starts crying. And Gio and all the other people there are just like, she's so adorable! Which, whatever.
I guess.
She's got big eyes and she's got blush under her cheeks. So Jill is like, no, don't respond to her that way. Who are you calling the prettiest girl of the Millennium? And she picks her up and starts threatening to break her neck.
It's kind of metal. It's kind of metal.
But Manchuri still says, like, no, I still won't use my power to help you, because you're just going to hurt somebody else if I do. And she's like, fine, I'll just wring the powers out of you if I must. And we cut to where Leo and Cub? I guess Cub is his name.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he gets knocked back by an explosion, so he's like, just go, Leo, I'll catch up. And Manchuri's like, oh, you're hurting me! And so she starts crying because it hurts so much, and her tears fall on the guy that Jilla beat up for reacting to Manchuri. So he's just like, oh, I'm fine now. He's like, ah, so your tears can heal wounds. Then I'll just force tears out of you in order to heal the officers. And Jilla's, of course, still watching this. He's like, hurry, Leo, hurry. And Leo rushes to the rescue and so on. We get this big speech about how important this is because, if she uses the heal fruits, then there will be, an endless supply of officers to turn the tide of the battle, and so they can't afford that to happen. So Leo rushes in, and he breaks down the door, and he comes in, and so he's going to save the princess, but she's already started crying, and the tears are falling towards the officers. So Cub comes in, and he's like, move, Leo! And he blasts all of the bodies of the officers, and they just go flying out of the way, and the tears fall on the ground uselessly. And Leo uses his sewing to sew up.
Hold on, you can't take away from her awesome response. That what?
I completely missed that.
He was like looking at it like what? You really struggled to get that one in there, but I'm glad you fucking crowbarred it in.
So Leo uses his sewing ability to take all of the unconscious officers and sew them together with Giola, and they all impact into her and knock her out with his haute-couture patchwork ability. And Manchuri is flying through the air after Giola has dropped her, and Manchuri thinks to herself, Leo came to save me, just like a prince. Yeah. And Giola, as she's collapsing, goes, art-tastic. So Leo catches Manchuri as she's falling, and she's like, "Ah, oh, he caught me. He's so manly and stuff, and I was so scared." And so Leo just goes, "Did you gain weight again, princess?" And she just punches him in the face.
And Cub's just like always, I don't get any of the fucking kisses or anything.
And so the day is saved, thanks to the Tantata.
The two Tantata, of which I kind of knew one of their names.
Right.
So, yeah,
not really heavily invested in the characters involved.
Well, let's
but
let's
it was look, amusing.
Let's look at this chapter, because we kind of got a glimpse at the start of this that maybe this actually wasn't going to be a chance for Robin to take on an opponent of the leader caliber level like we thought last week. She might actually be here solely so Cryos can. And I got kind of mixed thoughts on that, because one, I am disappointed we don't get to see Robin possibly have that fight, but on the other hand, it actually does make a lot more sense for Cryos to have this fight, considering this is the guy that killed his wife and has been torturing his daughter, essentially. So I kind of get the idea of like, hey, you know, let's have this guy have his moment. So I thought that was a little bit mixed bag. Also, I was happy because it's Bartolomeo for like one third of a page on this chapter, so that was pretty cool in my book. But, as I mentioned, I was like, I forgot this was even a subplot, but I'm kind of happy it got resolved basically in one chapter. And I'm currently working on, like, a One Piece form, a role-playing form, and, like, I've been kind of trying to come up with cool devil fruit ideas. And after seeing how the so-so fruit works in action, I'm like, damn, I really wish I had thought of this, because that was pretty fucking pimp the way you did that. Where he fucking sews all of the, defeated generals into fucking Gilia and knocks her out.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. But otherwise, I mean, it's fine. This is a chapter that didn't appeal to me, but they needed to address it since they introduced it. And it seems like, hopefully, that's kind of the end of this, and we get Senior Pink versus Frankie next week. Okay. There you go.
So, Toriko.
Well, I have 7 deadly sins, Nick. I don't want to tear you away from this. To discuss something as amazing as what 7 Deadly Sins has been recently. But it does have a half-naked young man on the cover, so I don't know if that's going to be enticing to you.
What, there aren't enough half-naked men in Toriko for you?
Well, this one's really... Well, this one has a quote saying, I should get dressed soon, or maybe I'll just go naked. So I don't know if Toriko has that.
Okay.
But anyway, this is chapter 112, Existence and Proof. So, last week ended with Gilia's brother, or not Gilia, yeah, Gilia, Gilia's brother meeting up with her and Gowther, and Gowther's like, you need to get out of here, and having his little electric finger thing. So we start this week with Diana talking to Elizabeth about love and all that stuff, and they see Gilia's brother, and they're like, hey, why are you out here? And he's like, who's Gilia? And, you know, he basically just explains, like, I don't even know who I am. So Diana takes him over to Gowther and Gilia and is like, hey, you know, he's fucking lost his memory and everything, and why is this happening? And Gowther's like, oh, that's because I did it. And Gowther explains why he's had this sudden douchey turn. He's like, I want a heart that understands emotions. And they're like, why do you want that? You're basically mind... Because he explains he's not only taken away Gilia's brother's memories, but also Gilia's memories as well, and replaced it with only the notion that the two of them are in a perfect relationship and happy forever. And then there's a brief little bit with the fucking pig that I don't care about. But then Gowther explains that the reason he's doing this is because... It's so strange. When the captain and Bond were having their fight, their power levels rose. And it's again with this power level bullshit. And they note that in that fight, the captain's power level rose 430 points, but Bond's rose 650. And the trigger that, you know, Gowther sensed that was the reason that Bond's power level increased so much more is that Bond's, you know, trigger was love. And as such, Gowther, this android-like creature, must come to understand love and your strange human emotions. So he basically has replaced all of Gilia's memories with the thoughts that she's supposed to be dating him, and he's like, it's not a bad thing I did it, because she had kind of a shitty past before this, so really, I'm helping her out. And obviously Diana's like, that's kind of fucked up. You're a dickhead. I'm going to crush you with a bunch of stone. And Gowther's like, no, you won't. I'm going to knock everybody in the area who's under power level 400 or below out, and then we're going to fight. And I don't know. It's really bad right now. I'm really not liking this way Seven Deadly Sins has been going for a little bit. It's just been rather miserable. So, Toriko, which had a wrestling ring.
Ding, ding, ding. Gourmet 309, the second moment. So, we're briefly introduced to when the Monkey King Bambino wants to sleep, he gives a little jump, which propels him 50 kilometers above the Earth's surface in one short second, shooting all the way into the stratosphere. He eventually breaks through the mesosphere, reaching up into the thermosphere, 90 to 500 kilometers above the Earth's surface. And there, in practically outer space, Bambino sleeps beneath the natural planetarium, on a bed of Milky Way stardust. Perhaps he's dreaming of playing with his lover from the past, if you know what we mean. I mean, look at those balls, right?
It'd be great, he has this big monkey boner, and they're like, who knows what he's dreaming about? I'm like, I think I can gather.
Just an awful sleep boner.
He's gonna have the worst morning wood on the planet. And when he comes back in on fucking re-entry, Jesus.
Oh! Ah!
Oh, what a terrible move that was.
Antic. So, Kaka goes, this can't be. Before suddenly the Bambino crashes back down to the Earth, and everyone's just like, he's here, and he's still sleeping. But then he wakes up and sees everybody. He's like, ooh, people to play with. And so, Toriko says, remember, don't blink. Here it comes. This is going to be the world's busiest millisecond. And a bit of drool drips out of Bambina's mouth. And then action sequence where Bambina tries to poke Zebra and Zebra's cells go, no, twitch your head out of the way. And he does. And so Bambina tries to take Coco's knees out. And Coco's cells go, no, dodge. So he dodges. And then Toriko locks hands with Bambina. And he goes all, blah, I've got a demon inside you. And so they have, like, dead even arm wrestling contest. As the bead of drool is touching the ground, Sonny is like, I tagged you, Bambina. You're it now. And also, all their pets are surrounding Bambina. And so it's just like, Toriko says, an ordinary person can't play with a tiger. Even though the tiger's only having fun, it would kill the human. Sorry that we didn't make very good playmates last time, but this time we're here to play. So what should we play next, Bambina? And Bambina starts to cry because he's so happy. And
Bambina for Straw Hat, Nick.
Bambina for Straw Hat would be fucking amazing. So, a parade of apes comes in. Like a literal parade, like with instruments and stuff. And one of them is a timekeeper, and he's ringing a bell. And they're like, what's going on? And Kaka says, I knew it. This ring is for a festival. All 5 billion of them... That doesn't like 5 billion monkeys. All 5 billion of them have come to watch. It's not a game they've come to see, but a serious battle against the Monkey King.
Can you imagine that dude at the back of a 5 billion-person crowd trying to watch things? They're like, come on! The 487 billion of you taller than me, sit down, please!
Down in front. pay more for your ticket, scrub.
Yeah, fuckhead. Why don't you learn some fucking monkey martial arts, stupid?
Just watch it on TV. It's the best seat in the house anyway.
I like the little notion that he actually fucking leaps into outer space to sleep. Like, that was, like, one of those ridiculous Toriko moments that just made me laugh at how absurdly awesome that is. But the rest of the chapter was kind of okay. I guess...
It was something that needed to happen, and it got out of the way quickly enough.
Yeah. That's the best way to put it.
And now they're going to have a wrestling slash boxing slash regular fighting match.
Of some variety.
Yeah. Okay. World Trigger?
Yeah, no, let's do it.
Chapter 90, Tamakoma 2, Part 5. So, the fight continues. We get a brief look at the scoreboard. Arafune Squad is down a man, so is Suwa Squad, but they've got a point. And Tamakoma Squad has everybody, but they've also got a point as well. So, the announcer says, you know, for Arafune Squad and the other snipers, other sniper singular, right? Suwa Squad doesn't have a sniper, do they?
Yeah, I think so.
Singular. Do your research. But yeah, she says, this sniper's paradise has been anything but that. And now on the counterattack, it's Marshall Sniper Captain Arafune. He's masterclass with both rifle and sword. And so they recap how, you know, he switched over. Everyone is talking about his accomplishments as just an attacker. Despite the fact that he switched over, he's still incredibly skilled as he clashes with Yuma. And he does I'm going to stab you through my cloak thing using the bagworm, and nearly catches Yuma. So, cool little move. Another sniper tries to shoot at Yuma, and he blocks it, but it chips away at his sword, which starts to give Arafune an advantage, basically. And they also... surmise that maybe Arafune hasn't turned off his bagworm to hide the leg that Suwa blew off before, so he's hiding his weakness with it. Let's see. Yuma kind of complains to himself about the fact that people have had time to study his moves now, so he's not just, you know, killing them off very quickly. Then, let's see. What's his name? God damn it. Okari. Yes, Okari. Okay. He is, it's like, okay, I gotta figure out what to do next, and someone else comes in, Sasamori, and he's like, I got him, and so Arafune is like, ah, Suwa Squad is aiming for me, I see. And basically, the announced team recaps the positions of everybody, except for Chika, who has vanished off the map completely, apparently. Also, one other guy is missing, too.
Yeah, I think everybody's accounted for there.
Oh, no, wait.
It's just we haven't seen Chica.
Just Chica's missing.
Yeah.
So they're basically like talking. It's like, oh, is Tamakoma going to seize this? What about Arafune Squad? What about Suwa Squad? It's the match is happening right now. You're not going to commercial. Just call the action. Stop building it up. The match is happening right now. That's bad announcing.
We'll come back right after this break. All right, we're back. Two people have died.
God, what's the long-haired guy's name that's commentating? I keep on forgetting, and you seem to remember it.
The black-haired, long-haired guy?
Yeah.
I have no clue.
Oh, okay. Well, he says, like, Mikimo from Tamakoma has been quiet, but he's gotten himself in a good position, because from his current location, he can shoot either member of Arafune Squad. He's marking them both, and so they have to pay attention to him while they're engaging their other opponents. And so, what's the squad that team... The A-rank squad team that everyone likes?
Ashiyama.
So he's like, oh, good job, Mikimo. And Katora just goes, it could be a coincidence.
Which is her way of being a tsundere for their inevitable relationship.
I like how everyone's just like jizzing all over Osamu's move. And she's just like, he can't be doing that on purpose.
Dumb fucking luck.
So, more of the side characters continue to fight, and Sasamori is still trying to mark Okari, and Okari's like, you don't stand a chance against us, you know, and so he's like, yeah, you're right, but my job is to pin you down, so I'm just gonna do my job, and so he's like, oh man,
That means that I'm not going to be able to handle him very easily. Should I try and shoot him at this distance? Nah, I can't hit him while I'm on the run. Well, this means I'm already dead. So he turns around, and he shoots Yuma in the shoulder, and allows Hikari to cut him apart, basically, and eliminate him. He just concludes, like, this is the best thing I can do. I'm just going to do damage before I get taken down. So everyone's like, oh, it looks like Kuga's going to be taken down. But it's like, no, it's not over yet. And so Yuma backs away from Arafune, and Arafune's like, oh, he's going to use the grasshopper to jump up. Well, I won't let that happen. But instead, Yuma angles himself to jump forward, and he slashes apart Arafune's legs as he dives underneath them. And so this causes an extensive Trion leak and forces him to very nearly bail out. He's not bailed out yet, but he's seemingly about to, because his legs are cut off. Yeah.
He's so, like, no! I'm like fucking Anakin Skywalker at the end of episode 3. I'm going to crawl towards you screaming and shit.
So everyone's like, oh, he's got too much experience. And then Suwa comes in and starts to attack them both. While he takes a shot, he's off balance and isn't on target because he's only got the one leg. And then Osamu says, Kuga, Sasamori's headed your way, and he's using his chameleon. So they ask Usami for backup to give him his position, and they're like, okay, Yuma, he's behind you and a tiny bit left. So Yuma's thinking, okay, as long as I know that, then I can just kill him as soon as he shows his face. But then he bumps into the guy as he comes up behind him, and Hikari just holds him in place as he gets stabbed through the chest. And he's like, Suwa, I stopped him! And so Suwa whirls around and is like, okay, I'm gonna blow him away! That's where the chapter ends.
Another very cool action-packed chapter. I like the strategy, and I like Yuma being like, I'm going to use the grasshopper, but actually that's just a feint. I'm going to bounce off the wall directly. Mm-hmm. I like this kid. I don't know his name, but he's like, I'm going to grab him so hard I'm going to impale myself with my own weapons to make sure I hold on to him.
Yeah.
He's a little fuck.
It's like, dude, you could have grabbed him without stabbing yourself.
He's like, and then he would have gotten away.
No, have to be dramatic.
It's not cool.
Look at my try, I'm leaking everywhere.
I kind of feel like I know what's being set up here, because we haven't seen Chika at all, so I feel like that's the inevitable, like, oh, hey, where is she? And if you notice on the diagram on the second to last page, everyone's lined up in pretty much a straight line right now, so I feel like she's about to take the shot. It'll probably blast Yuma away too, but it'll get at least the other two remaining members of Suya Squad, and possibly the last member of Arafune's squad if he's still alive.
Yeah.
And then that way they get those points plus Chika, and presumably Makuma will still be, Osama will still be around.
Yeah. I mean, it's still looking pretty damn good for Tamakomo right now. I guess it's just building up, like, you know, Yuma is their ace and he's in danger.
Yeah.
But all their opponents are injured now, like severely injured.
But it's also pretty important that they're doing this, because we're still at that point now where we know this group on a whole should be A rank, but they have to earn their spot there. And this is the middle battle where they're still going to be challenged, but ultimately we should still expect them to win. So what I feel like this battle is doing is showing, you know, we still want to get that message across, but we still want to have drama to it. So this is a fight to show that Osamu's, or that Yuma's not unbeatable, that he's not immortal. This is a guy who can be defeated. He's still really strong, but, you know, the tactics have kind of managed to defeat him. He's not a one-man army. This is a unit.
And the thing that Hikari did by, you know, sacrificing himself just to hold him in place for someone else, that's actually a very Osamu thing to do as well. So.
And we got the sniper, too, who was like, I know I'm going to go down, so instead of wasting my last shot on this guy, I'm going to use my last shot to do some damage so my guy can take out Yuma.
Right.
Some cool stuff here.
Yeah, and so that is it for the recap.
This might be a shorter episode of Weekly Manga Recap.
It's under 2 hours, my god.
We could do 4 hours of Q&A to make up for it.
No, let's not do that.
Okay.
yeah, I think that we're just gonna, I guess, wrap things up here.
Alright, go for it.
Alright, thank you everybody who joined us here on Weekly Manga Recap. We record the show live on twitch.tv/RoloT, usually Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we do need to change it up, as schedules allow, so follow us on Twitter for updates. He is at RoloT, and I'm at YRolerofTime, and we'll let you know when the podcast starts.
Also, be sure to send us your criticism, questions, and suggestions for future manga for us to read in the comments section or email them to us. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com is the address. Special thanks to Steve Man, our title creator. You can check out his work at rockfanboy.deviantart.com, iDriveBoobs.tumblr.com, and his Patreon. It's patreon.com/Steve Man, I believe.
Yes.
And also, special thanks to the infamous Planet, who does those awesome visual editions of our show. He did the Naruto finale most recently. So.
A lot of people dug that episode, so go definitely check it out on YouTube and watch the visual version.
Of course, make sure that you check us out on iTunes, leave comments and stuff, so that we can beat those damn woodworkers.
Someone's got to take the woodworking podcast down a notch. You know what, on their podcast, they're thinking the same thing. They're like, someone's got to take the fucking manga podcast out.
For the recommendation that we're taking now, it's something that we have had recommended to us actually a number of times, including recently, but just in general, a lot of people have been asking us to do it. So we're going to be covering Akame ga Kill, which is a series that got an anime recently, and I think that that's driven a lot of attention towards it, but let me just read this thing, because I don't actually know anything about the series. Tatsumi is a fighter who just got robbed by a pretty girl, but his luck seems to be looking up, as another pretty girl has taken him in. What he doesn't know is that this girl is about to be visited by a family of assassins, including the girl who robbed him, and they might be the good guys, and be recruiting him to their cause. So yeah.
We're getting a lot of interesting responses in our chat regarding this one, so I don't know. Yeah. We might break our streak of awesome series. Who knows?
Fuck that series. Oh god.
We'll see. We'll see what happens with that. Alright. Okay. What do we do? What do we close out with?
I don't know. We used a lot of our anecdotes in the opening.
I was gonna say, I really don't have a story that could top Paul's grandma telling me to stop fucking bitching about meatball subs on Facebook. So,
you want to just go out on that note?
I guess. Yeah, I was like, I guess just go back, listen to that part of the podcast again, that story,
just
and then just
pretend that that is what we ended on.
Yeah, and then just stop after that point.
Okay. Bye.
Hashtag Rumory.